Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Series 2018. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words or a number for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Which book did the man get the recipe from? B. What does he need to buy before he can make the recipe?
Have you decided what to cook yet?
Yes. I've spent ages going through your cookery books. I liked some of the ideas in this one, Baking for Beginners.
That's a good book.
But what I'm going to attempt is this cake. See, it's in Life is Sweet. Didn't your mum give you that book?
That's right, but I haven't used it much yet. So, have we got all the ingredients you need?
Let me check. We've got flour and sugar. I know we've run out of coconut. And what about lemons?
There are a couple here. I bought them yesterday. Have you decided what to cook yet?
Yes. I've spent ages going through your cookery books. I liked some of the ideas in this one, Baking for Beginners.
That's a good book.
But what I'm going to attempt is this cake. See, it's in Life is Sweet. Didn't your mum give you that book?
That's right, but I haven't used it much yet. So, have we got all the ingredients you need?
Let me check. We've got flour and sugar. I know we've run out of coconut. And what about lemons?
There are a couple here. I bought them yesterday.
Question 2. A. Which part of the museum will the group visit first? B. What time will they return to school?
Listen carefully, everyone. I need to tell you about the museum trip tomorrow. So, the museum is divided into 5 areas, but we'll only have time to visit 3 of them. Space, science and technology, starting with the first of these. Don't forget to bring your notepads and pens with you. There's been a slight change to the schedule. We won't be getting back here until 6:15 p.m, so please tell your parents. I know we said we'd be back at school at 5:30 p.m, but the bus company has pointed out that they're not allowed to park outside the museum before 5:15, so that's the earliest they can pick us up. Listen carefully, everyone. I need to tell you about the museum trip tomorrow. So, the museum is divided into 5 areas, but we'll only have time to visit 3 of them. Space, science and technology, starting with the first of these. Don't forget to bring your notepads and pens with you. There's been a slight change to the schedule. We won't be getting back here until 6:15 p.m, so please tell your parents. I know we said we'd be back at school at 5:30 p.m, but the bus company has pointed out that they're not allowed to park outside the museum before 5:15, so that's the earliest they can pick us up.
Question 3. A. What was the girl's favourite band called? B. Where was the jewellery stall?
Hi, it's Jenny. I went to the festival in town today. It was great. You should go tomorrow. I'll come with you if you're free. The music was brilliant. I really liked Rock City, the band you told me about. But then the next group, Summer Sky, was even better. They're playing again tomorrow at 3, if you have a chance to see them. There are some great things to buy as well. There are stalls everywhere. I got some earrings from one opposite the supermarket and a lovely scarf for my sister. That was from a stall outside college. Anyway, you should go. Bye! Hi, it's Jenny. I went to the festival in town today. It was great. You should go tomorrow. I'll come with you if you're free. The music was brilliant. I really liked Rock City, the band you told me about. But then the next group, Summer Sky, was even better. They're playing again tomorrow at 3, if you have a chance to see them. There are some great things to buy as well. There are stalls everywhere. I got some earrings from one opposite the supermarket and a lovely scarf for my sister. That was from a stall outside college. Anyway, you should go. Bye!
Question 4. A. Which character in the film did the man feel sorry for? B. Which aspect of the film did the woman dislike?
Well, what did you think of that film?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Apart from the judge, who I thought was rather annoying. But I guess we weren't supposed to like him. But I really felt for the detective. He had such a tough job. The actor who played him was amazing.
I know. He was great. And the scenery couldn't have been better. I think it made the story even more dramatic. I wasn't sure about the music at first, but after a while I changed my mind about it. My only complaint is the length. I can't sit still for that much time.
I'm with you there.
Well, what did you think of that film?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Apart from the judge, who I thought was rather annoying. But I guess we weren't supposed to like him. But I really felt for the detective. He had such a tough job. The actor who played him was amazing.
I know. He was great. And the scenery couldn't have been better. I think it made the story even more dramatic. I wasn't sure about the music at first, but after a while I changed my mind about it. My only complaint is the length. I can't sit still for that much time.
I'm with you there.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a talk given by a head teacher to students who are going to leave school next year. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Listen carefully, everybody. As you know, this is your final year at school and there are several options available to you after you leave. We've decided to arrange a series of lunchtime talks every Tuesday from next week until the end of term for any of you to come to if you're interested. We hope it will help you think about your future options and make the decision-making process slightly easier. I know lots of you are hoping to go to university, so we'll start off by considering the reasons for and against taking a year off. We'll also provide you with some general information about how to get a loan, should you need to cover your university costs. We've arranged several short sessions on a range of courses you could consider, The most popular ones tend to be, for example, law, medicine and economics. We'll start off with the last of these. If there's a particular course you'd like us to cover, just let us know. There will also be a useful session which focuses on the ways in which university life differs from being at school. You'll need to get used to working alone without so much guidance. And obviously, time management is something that most people need to think about. We've also invited a few guest speakers to join us. Firstly, two or three ex-students who are currently in their second year at university are going to come back here and tell you about some practical things, such as having a job during term time, accommodation, and dealing with money. We've contacted a couple of professors too, who can tell you about the academic side of things. We've invited Professor Black from Hampton College, who we're still waiting to hear back from. And also Professor James from Bridge College, who has accepted. She'll be happy to answer specific questions if you send them in beforehand. Of course, not all of you want to go to university. It's becoming increasingly popular to do an apprenticeship, which means learning a practical trade from an employer. So we've arranged a couple of sessions on this too. You might be considering a future as a mechanic, let's say. A member of staff will talk about this possibility and other options, including becoming a plumber. And a hairdresser will also come in and tell us how he began his working life as an apprentice. Others of you might prefer to go straight into employment, so we'll have a session on that in which you can watch a DVD, Choosing Jobs. There's another really useful DVD, Successful Interviews, and you can watch that in your own time. That is just an outline of what's on offer. For more information, take a look at the newsletter which you can pick up from the table next to reception, and also at the notice board in the corridor in front of the library. The sessions themselves will be in the computer room. You don't need to sign up in advance, just turn up on the day. So, has anyone got any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Listen carefully, everybody. As you know, this is your final year at school, and there are several options available to you after you leave. We've decided to arrange a series of lunchtime talks every Tuesday from next week until the end of term for any of you to come to if you're interested. We hope it will help you think about your future options and make the decision-making process slightly easier. I know lots of you are hoping to go to university, so we'll start off by considering the reasons for and against taking a year off. We'll also provide you with some general information about how to get a loan, should you need to cover your university costs. We've arranged several short sessions on a range of courses you could consider. The most popular ones tend to be, for example, law, medicine and economics. We'll start off with the last of these. If there's a particular course you'd like us to cover, just let us know. There will also be a useful session which focuses on the ways in which university life differs from being at school. You'll need to get used to working alone without so much guidance. And obviously, time management is something that most people need to think about. We've also invited a few guest speakers to join us. Firstly, two or three ex-students who are currently in their second year at university are going to come back here and tell you about some practical things, such as having a job during term time, accommodation, and dealing with money. We've contacted a couple of professors too, who can tell you about the academic side of things. We've invited Professor Black from Hampton College, who we're still waiting to hear back from. And also Professor James from Bridge College, who has accepted. She'll be happy to answer specific questions if you send them in beforehand. Of course, not all of you want to go to university. It's becoming increasingly popular to do an apprenticeship, which means learning a practical trade from an employer. So we've arranged a couple of sessions on this too. You might be considering a future as a mechanic, let's say. A member of staff will talk about this possibility and other options, including becoming a plumber. And a hairdresser will also come in and tell us how he began his working life as an apprentice. Others of you might prefer to go straight into employment, so we'll have a session on that in which you can watch a DVD, Choosing Jobs. There's another really useful DVD, Successful Interviews, and you can watch that in your own time. That is just an outline of what's on offer. For more information, take a look at the newsletter, which you can pick up from the table next to reception, and also at the notice board in the corridor in front of the library. The sessions themselves will be in the computer room. You don't need to sign up in advance, just turn up on the day. So, has anyone got any questions?
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about what they think schools should teach young people about money. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
When I was younger, I'd hear people talking about things like inflation and the cost of living, and I just couldn't work out what they really meant. I think these economic terms could be explained in a really simple way, and that children would be much better prepared for the real world if they learned these things at school. That's so much more important than spending time discussing what you'd do if you had £1 million, or the disadvantages of being rich, for example.
Speaker 2.
I got a Saturday job when I was 14, working in a cafe. When I got paid each month, I'd spend it all straight away. I always knew what I wanted. And I'd usually already worked out what I'd be buying the following month, too. It meant I didn't have any money left until I got my next pay packet, but that didn't bother me. What I think is a problem is that people don't know what to do when they've used up all their money. They need to understand the consequences of that.
Speaker 3.
These days, in many countries, it seems quite normal to be in debt. Most people borrow money to pay for college fees, then get another loan to buy a house or to go on holiday, and so on. Young people know how easy it is to borrow money. What perhaps they don't understand is what they need to borrow for. I think schools should raise awareness of how much you need to live comfortably in the real world and what the cost of everything is.
Speaker 4.
My dad always said it's important to put some of your money away each month, even if it's just a tiny bit, so that when you need something unexpectedly in the future, you've got money to pay for it. I'm glad my dad taught me to save, but it would be even better if schools did this. I think financial education is really important. Not so much learning the meaning of all the complicated language that economists and politicians use, but the practical skills you need later in life.
Speaker 5. If you ask most young people what they want to do in the future, they'll say they want to earn lots of money. They think if you don't have much money, it means you haven't succeeded in life, and that's a cause of so much stress in adults. Schools should help children to realise that you can get a lot out of life without much money. Satisfaction is so much more important than a big salary. You can actually live very comfortably without very much money at all, if you're careful. Speaker 6.
I've just been to the bank to talk about my financial situation. We've worked out a plan so that hopefully I'll pay off my debts within 10 years. I didn't think about the future when I got my first credit card. Of course, I spent far too much with it, and I've got a big loan for my car as well. It's great that banks are so willing to lend money, but young people need to consider how difficult it can be to pay it back. Schools should really make them aware of this.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
When I was younger, I'd hear people talking about things like inflation and the cost of living, and I just couldn't work out what they really meant. I think these economic terms could be explained in a really simple way, and that children would be much better prepared for the real world if they learned these things at school. That's so much more important than spending time discussing what you'd do if you had £1 million, or the disadvantages of being rich, for example.
Speaker 2.
I got a Saturday job when I was 14, working in a cafe. When I got paid each month, I'd spend it all straight away. I always knew what I wanted. And I'd usually already worked out what I'd be buying the following month, too. It meant I didn't have any money left until I got my next pay packet, but that didn't bother me. What I think is a problem is that people don't know what to do when they've used up all their money. They need to understand the consequences of that.
Speaker 3.
These days, in many countries, it seems quite normal to be in debt. Most people borrow money to pay for college fees, then get another loan to buy a house or to go on holiday, and so on. Young people know how easy it is to borrow money. What perhaps they don't understand is what they need to borrow for. I think schools should raise awareness of how much you need to live comfortably in the real world and what the cost of everything is.
Speaker 4.
My dad always said it's important to put some of your money away each month, even if it's just a tiny bit, so that when you need something unexpectedly in the future, you've got money to pay for it. I'm glad my dad taught me to save, but it would be even better if schools did this. I think financial education is really important. Not so much learning the meaning of all the complicated language that economists and politicians use, but the practical skills you need later in life.
Speaker 5. If you ask most young people what they want to do in the future, they'll say they want to earn lots of money. They think if you don't have much money, it means you haven't succeeded in life, and that's a cause of so much stress in adults. Schools should help children to realise that you can get a lot out of life without much money. Satisfaction is so much more important than a big salary. You can actually live very comfortably without very much money at all, if you're careful. Speaker 6.
I've just been to the bank to talk about my financial situation. We've worked out a plan so that hopefully I'll pay off my debts within 10 years. I didn't think about the future when I got my first credit card. Of course, I spent far too much with it, and I've got a big loan for my car as well. It's great that banks are so willing to lend money, but young people need to consider how difficult it can be to pay it back. Schools should really make them aware of this.
That is the end of question 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear an interview with a man called Jules Bergen, who looks for messages in bottles on the seashore. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
My first guest today is a man with a rather unusual hobby. Jules, tell us what you've brought with you today.
Well, it's a message in a bottle. This is the first one I found about 10 years ago, and ever since then I've been looking for more. I picked it up on a beach in Barbados and discovered it had been sent by a couple from Australia who were on a cruise around the island of Madeira.
That's amazing. So what was it like finding your first message in a bottle?
I saw some blue glass on the beach, then realised it was a bottle, and there was something inside. I was so excited and couldn't wait to open it up. I imagined a map of a treasure island or someone asking for help. I didn't expect to be able to read it. I thought the paper would have got wet or the writing would have faded in the sun. But actually, it was like new.
What did the message say?
This one was really short. The names of the couple who'd sent it, where from, and their contact details. Of course, I decided I'd get in touch as soon as I got back to my hotel. My first thought was to call them, as I wanted to hear the surprise in their voices. Then I worked out it would be very early there, so I thought it would be better to write. I got out my laptop and sent them a message. I was too impatient to post a real letter.
And did you get a response?
Oh, yes. They were happy to know I'd found their message and relieved they hadn't written anything silly. But they said they would have liked the bottle to have travelled for longer. They'd only thrown it into the sea 8 months previously. But I couldn't believe it had got so far in one piece.
Tell me about some other messages in bottles you found.
Well, there's one that's special to me because it was written on the day I was born. This also turned out to be the wedding day of the woman who threw it into the sea. I managed to contact her, with difficulty, and we've stayed in touch. She even arranged a party when she heard that I'd found her message.
Do the bottles ever contain anything else?
Sometimes, yes. I've occasionally picked up a bottle with a picture inside it. One particular one was of a boy climbing a palm tree. And it's not unusual to find things like dollar bills or business cards either. But one thing I hadn't anticipated coming across was a piece of cake. It looked edible, but I didn't try it.
I wouldn't have either. Anyway, have you ever met up with any of the senders?
A few times, yes, but it's quite tricky to arrange. It's an odd idea going to visit people who you have no idea about. There are no guarantees you'll have any shared interests or even get on. But that hasn't been my experience so far, and usually they're as excited to meet up as I am.
And you've just come back from the Turks and Caicos Islands, which is one of the best places to find washed-up bottles.
That's right. I visited the National Museum there, where they have a collection of about 100 bottles, most of which have been donated by people who found them locally. I took along a couple that I'd picked up, and the museum was delighted with them. The display tells you about the collector as well as the bottle itself, which is nice. Some bottles there had been thrown into the sea as part of a research project a few years ago, investigating the ocean currents in the area. That was interesting to read about.
Fascinating. Well, Jules, that's all we've got time for, so thank you and good luck collecting.
Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
My first guest today is a man with a rather unusual hobby. Jules, tell us what you've brought with you today.
Well, it's a message in a bottle. This is the first one I found about 10 years ago, and ever since then I've been looking for more. I picked it up on a beach in Barbados and discovered it had been sent by a couple from Australia who were on a cruise around the island of Madeira.
That's amazing. So what was it like finding your first message in a bottle?
I saw some blue glass on the beach, then realised it was a bottle, and there was something inside. I was so excited and couldn't wait to open it up. I imagined a map of a treasure island or someone asking for help. I didn't expect to be able to read it. I thought the paper would have got wet or the writing would have faded in the sun. But actually, it was like new.
What did the message say?
This one was really short. The names of the couple who'd sent it, where from, and their contact details. Of course, I decided I'd get in touch as soon as I got back to my hotel. My first thought was to call them, as I wanted to hear the surprise in their voices. Then I worked out it would be very early there, so I thought it would be better to write. I got out my laptop and sent them a message. I was too impatient to post a real letter.
And did you get a response?
Oh, yes. They were happy to know I'd found their message, and relieved they hadn't written anything silly. But they said they would have liked the bottle to have travelled for longer. They'd only thrown it into the sea 8 months previously. But I couldn't believe it had got so far in one piece.
Tell me about some other messages in bottles you found.
Well, there's one that's special to me, because it was written on the day I was born. This also turned out to be the wedding day of the woman who threw it into the sea. I managed to contact her, with difficulty, and we've stayed in touch. She even arranged a party when she heard that I'd found her message.
Do the bottles ever contain anything else?
Sometimes, yes. I've occasionally picked up a bottle with a picture inside it. One particular one was of a boy climbing a palm tree. And it's not unusual to find things like dollar bills or business cards either. But one thing I hadn't anticipated coming across was a piece of cake. It looked edible, but I didn't try it.
I wouldn't have either. Anyway, have you ever met up with any of the senders?
A few times, yes, but it's quite tricky to arrange. It's an odd idea going to visit people who you have no idea about. There are no guarantees you'll have any shared interests or even get on. But that hasn't been my experience so far, and usually they're as excited to meet up as I am.
And you've just come back from the Turks and Caicos Islands, which is one of the best places to find washed-up bottles.
That's right. I visited the National Museum there, where they have a collection of about 100 bottles, most of which have been donated by people who found them locally. I took along a couple that I'd picked up, and the museum was delighted with them. The display tells you about the collector as well as the bottle itself, which is nice. Some bottles there had been thrown into the sea as part of a research project a few years ago, investigating the ocean currents in the area. That was interesting to read about.
Fascinating. Well, Jules, that's all we've got time for, so thank you and good luck collecting.
Thank you.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8, Part A. You will hear a teacher giving a talk about the role of motivation in exercise. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
We all know how easy it is to make a lifestyle decision, for example, to get fitter, lose weight, or eat more healthily. But how many of us keep it up? It's purely a matter of motivation. When we try to do something new, we often seek motivation from the wrong person. A personal trainer, for example, is already addicted to sport, doesn't need a reason to do it, and probably doesn't appreciate how difficult it is for you or me to maintain motivation. And telling yourself that you can have a reward if you do your daily exercise is another typical source of failure. Plenty of studies show that this technique simply increases the unpleasantness of the exercise. People become less interested in what they have to do and more focused on what they will get afterwards. So, what are the best ways of motivating yourself? First of all, think about what you want to achieve. Most people would laugh at the idea of going for small targets, tending to have ambitious ones instead. But the advantage is that the former are easier to achieve and can be built on. Aiming for something too big can become intimidating, so it gets put off and leads to failure. Then consider taking up a sport that will help you develop a skill you currently lack or will enable you to reach a significant level of strength or endurance. This way, you'll get a feeling of progress, and the feeling will be linked directly to the activity itself, therefore increasing your motivation. As I mentioned earlier, studies show that giving yourself some kind of external encouragement doesn't always work. However, if you focus on loss, you're more likely to succeed than if you concentrate on the concept of gain. For example, don't tell yourself you can go to the cinema if you stick to your exercise plans this week. Instead, buy the ticket and give it to a friend and ask them to rip it up if you fail. My final point is to do with the way we divide up time in our minds into what's known as an episode. What we need to do is make an adjustment to any mental boundary that we have so that when we think about the time spent doing exercise, this includes the pleasant hot shower afterwards or the coffee with your friend. This makes the thought more appealing and is more likely to lead to success.
Now you will hear the talk again.
We all know how easy it is to make a lifestyle decision, for example, to get fitter, lose weight, or eat more healthily, but how many of us keep it up? It's purely a matter of motivation. When we try to do something new, we often seek motivation from the wrong person. A personal trainer, for example, is already addicted to sport, doesn't need a reason to do it, and probably doesn't appreciate how difficult it is for you or me to maintain motivation. And telling yourself that you can have a reward if you do your daily exercise is another typical source of failure. Plenty of studies show that this technique simply increases the unpleasantness of the exercise. People become less interested in what they have to do and more focused on what they will get afterwards. So what are the best ways of motivating yourself? First of all, think about what you want to achieve. Most people would laugh at the idea of going for small targets, tending to have ambitious ones instead. But the advantage is that the former are easier to achieve and can be built on. Aiming for something too big can become intimidating, so it gets put off and leads to failure. Then consider taking up a sport that will help you develop a skill you currently lack or will enable you to reach a significant level of strength or endurance. This way you'll get a feeling of progress, and the feeling will be linked directly to the activity itself, therefore increasing your motivation. As I mentioned earlier, studies show that giving yourself some kind of external encouragement doesn't always work. However, if you focus on loss, you're more likely to succeed than if you concentrate on the concept of gain. For example, don't tell yourself you can go to the cinema if you stick to your exercise plans this week. Instead, buy the ticket and give it to a friend and ask them to rip it up if you fail. My final point is to do with the way we divide up time in our minds into what's known as an episode. What we need to do is make an adjustment to any mental boundary that we have so that when we think about the time spent doing exercise, this includes the pleasant hot shower afterwards or the coffee with your friend. This makes the thought more appealing and is more likely to lead to success.
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about doing exercise with friends and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Thanks for the article on motivation. It was really interesting.
I think it'll be useful for our presentation. Are you happy with the topic? Exercising with a friend?
Yeah, there's plenty to talk about and it's relevant to everyone too. Shall we start with examples about ourselves? You know, how easy it is to find excuses not to go to the gym unless you've made an arrangement with someone beforehand. It's as if you don't want to let them down.
That's why they're called a fitness buddy. We could link that with the opinions of the different sports psychologists in the article. I'll check their names later. They refer to the person you exercise with as a form of healthy competition because they get you out when you don't feel like it and create a sense of responsibility to someone else.
I also read that if you're engaging socially with other people when you're exercising, it can mean you exercise for longer. The concept is all about distraction. In other words, if you're gossiping with a friend while you're in the gym, your perception of how much effort you're putting in is much less, and time seems to pass more quickly.
That's so true for me. We could also talk about how to choose the best person to exercise with. What do you think?
Definitely. Most people would choose their best friend, who might not be at all compatible. The right person clearly needs to have the same style as you and a similar schedule, though dedication is what they need above all else.
And ideally, they should have a similar level of ability too. I read one study which showed that participants worked out for up to 200% longer if they felt they were with someone just a bit better than them. Apparently, the motivation is less to do with improvement than with the instinct for survival in these cases. It sounds extreme.
But it makes sense. Shall we finish with something slightly different? Like those apps you were telling me about? What was the one that people download to find out about free 5-kilometre runs?
That's called Parkrun. It's become really popular. And I could mention Go Together, which was launched last year. You input your location, the activity you want to do and so on, and it pairs you up with someone suitable.
Sounds good.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Thanks for the article on motivation. It was really interesting.
I think it'll be useful for our presentation. Are you happy with the topic? Exercising with a friend?
Yeah, there's plenty to talk about and it's relevant to everyone too. Shall we start with examples about ourselves? You know, how easy it is to find excuses not to go to the gym unless you've made an arrangement with someone beforehand. It's as if you don't want to let them down.
That's why they're called a fitness buddy. We could link that with the opinions of the different sports psychologists in the article. I'll check their names later. They refer to the person you exercise with as a form of healthy competition because they get you out when you don't feel like it and create a sense of responsibility to someone else.
I also read that if you're engaging socially with other people when you're exercising, it can mean you exercise for longer. The concept is all about distraction. In other words, if you're gossiping with a friend while you're in the gym, your perception of how much effort you're putting in is much less, and time seems to pass more quickly.
That's so true for me. We could also talk about how to choose the best person to exercise with. What do you think?
Definitely. Most people would choose their best friend, who might not be at all compatible. The right person clearly needs to have the same style as you and a similar schedule, though dedication is what they need above all else.
And ideally, they should have a similar level of ability too. I read one study which showed that participants worked out for up to 200% longer if they felt they were with someone just a bit better than them. Apparently, the motivation is less to do with improvement than with the instinct for survival in these cases. It sounds extreme.
But it makes sense. Shall we finish with something slightly different? Like those apps you were telling me about? What was the one that people download to find out about free 5-kilometre runs?
That's called Parkrun. It's become really popular. And I could mention Go Together, which was launched last year. You input your location, the activity you want to do and so on, and it pairs you up with someone suitable.
Sounds good.
That is the end of question 8 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.